Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Hello, and welcome to June podcasting of Rogues Gallery.
Yes.
Is it different than May podcasting?
It's warmer.
Yes.
Oh God, that's right. I did my yard yesterday, and I about wanted to die.
Yep, it's not great.
It's reached that. Not great. Kind of...
Apparently, the Gulf waters are like superheated, and like death steam from them
Why?
Is coming
is
to
the,
us.
Is there a reason for that?
I don't know. It's probably just random chance, and there's no reason we should look into.
I'm assuming it's the Cobra Weather Dominator.
Probably is
trying to get.
I believe that's actually the one thing that could fix it.
Wow. Wait a minute, we're putting our faith in Cobra?
Well, I have bad news. I've been using the weather down there to make things warmer because I like summer.
I knew it.
That's on me.
Just wait, G.I. Joe's going to come for you.
That's true. All right. It is summer. Summer reading challenge continues. You got till August to get that reading challenge in. If you have kids or you know kids of that age, or
we've got quite a few people
broadly like age, what, 7 to 15, 16, or whatever.
I think it goes younger than that.
I think it'll allow even like if you've got a kid that you might read stories to, as long as they could kind of tell you like a favorite part of the story. That's really the only qualifier to mark that they've read a story.
It's cheating, but we'll allow it.
No, it's not cheating. kids have been having a lot of fun with that. We've still got prize packs to give out.
But a lot of people have turned in packets so far.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of kids
really
having
cool.
fun reading.
Yeah.
Yep. There are some games this week. We got a game called Star Wars Bounty Hunters that is, it's not exactly real time, but it is a simultaneous play game, which I think is interesting.
I saw that when I was putting it on the shelf, and I couldn't kind of wrap my head around the idea.
If you can, slap the other player in mid-movement.
It's not that.
Oh.
Each player starts with four cards in their hand, and each turn you pick a card from one of the available piles. Targets, hunters, contracts, and Jawa market. Then you can choose to either play or sell that card. Finally, you pass your remaining hand to your left-hand neighbor. So there's a bit of drafting.
Okay.
Your goals are to capture targets, complete contracts, and purchase droids and crates.
So I assume you play one of the legendary bounty hunters like Bossk and...
I assume you play that cyborg guy you hate.
No. I will tear up that card. I will open everyone's copy and tear up that card because he's a dumb creation.
Instead of Bossk, it should be Boss Skaggs.
I assume it's Mandalorian, Boba Fett...
It probably is, yes.
Like, all, like, the quintessential ones you would expect.
Dengar and Bossk.
You're all Boba Fett.
And even the slightly lesser-known ones like Forlum. Maybe. We don't know.
I bet... Who's the blue guy from Clone Wars?
Cad Bane.
I bet Cad Bane's in there.
He should probably be in there.
But
that sounds like a fun... That sounds like a fun kind of quick play game. Probably one of those, like, 15, 20-minute games.
We still have some of the free play mats.
Right, you get a free play mat when you buy it.
Yep.
Somebody came up to the other day, and I couldn't remember for sure, and they were like, "How much is this?" And I was like, "I think it comes free with it," and it was a very satisfying moment for all.
Yes.
Sorry, but I was pausing there because there was a weird sound outside from some car backing up.
Yeah. We got Ticket to Ride Paris, which is another one of these self-contained small ticket to ride games. We got a game, I can't pronounce this, I'm just going to spell it, S-F-Y-N-X.
Sphinx.
Oh, that makes sense.
it's like a futuristic Egyptian kind of thing.
It's a game where you're trying to solve 9 riddles before the Klepsydra empties. You manipulate tiles on a 5x5 grid, so the position of the tiles match patterns shown on the riddle cards.
Klepsydra?
I don't know.
Is that like lead for Cleopatra or something?
But yeah, it's timed. You have a limited amount of turns. It's not like real time, but you have a certain amount of turns.
Okay.
You get a card, and then you cooperatively have to match these tiles. Like, it's kind of like a slidey puzzle.
See, I feel like you should incorporate a sand timer, because it's Egyptian.
I mean, that makes sense.
It would make sense.
But, like, that's like actual timers, like,
it's horrible.
Jeopardy song hanging over your head.
Oh, no, it's horrible and nerve-wracking, and I don't think games should have it, but it makes sense thematically.
Just the other day, I was talking to my sister, and to reminisce briefly, she had a boyfriend when I was a little kid. She had a boyfriend, and we would play Trivial Pursuit. And every time somebody was trying to think of the answer, he would hum that stupid Jeopardy theme song.
Oh, anyway, he's dead now.
He should have been ejected out of the house.
He was a good guy, but half the time we bring him up now, that's what we remember about him. So just so you know, don't be that person.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
We got a mini game called Sirens, which is a one- or two-player game where you draft cards to construct a song to lure sailors away from the nearby ship.
You're trying to make these songs?
You're trying to make the songs.
Oh, that sounds fun. Cool. I don't know what kind of songs these are, but that sounds like a neat mechanic. An
optional and fun companion app you can use to take a picture of the cards in your tableau at the end of the game. And then the app will play back the song in real time.
What?
Yep.
Like, does the app know all the words and stuff like that that are available and kind of combines them? That's fun.
It's kind of fun. Yeah, like I say, solo or two-player game, which is pretty cool. There's a game called Tengram City. It's a tile-laying game. You're building cities for the queen. Whoever builds the best city will be rewarded by the queen. Huh? You know, we like the tile laying games, like Carcassonne.
Yep. We like games with queens in them, too.
I do, yes, for the queen.
Yep.
We got Zombicide Monty Python's Flying Circus.
That is one of the weirder mashups we've heard of.
It is.
It comes with a big giant foot.
Well, I mean, that's pretty cool, I have to admit.
Yep.
Yeah, they're all in there. All the miniatures are great.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. They're definitely, I see ads, they're like, they're doing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle ones. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle is a hard thing to say.
I guess.
That's why they call it TMNT.
I was going to say, just cheat, it's fine.
If you're part of the Shredder's Foot Clan.
I am part of the Shredder's Foot Clan, also Cobra.
Well, I mean, Zombicide is definitely reaching that point where they're just grabbing licenses like crazy. It's like, oh, we're going to do...
Zombicide Hello Kitty.
Iron Maiden. We did that.
Supernatural.
Yeah.
Dark Knight's Metal.
All of like Marvel Marvel Zombies.
They should get John Wick. They just gunned those dudes down.
Oh, I'm sure John Wick and his dog.
They kickstarted Deceased recently too, so.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
So, yeah. And then if you are a Vampire Requiem player, that's not called Vampire Requiem, it's Vampire the Masquerade.
Vampire the Masquerade.
You can. There's a new book called The Crimson Gutter Chronicle. No, Crimson Cutter Chronicle.
Okay,
Crimson Gutter Cutter. Sounds cool.
That basically has like it explores feeding and the masquerade itself. It sounds like sort of a
kind of
stories,
lore.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So
num num num. They're very grim dark, but when they feast upon your blood,
that's what they say.
Num num num.
That is what they said they have to. All right. Let's talk about comics of the week.
Yes.
It's actually, there's a fair amount of number ones this week, including the first number one in the Energon universe in a little while, Scarlet number one.
Yeah.
Now, we all got to read this in ahead of time.
Yep.
And we loved it, and we all read it again this week, and
it's true.
Still love it.
Yep.
I think, Nick, you and I have been having a debate about whether or not this or Duke is the strongest first issue.
It's true. I love Duke. It's very action-packed. This one has a cool kind of infiltration story.
It does.
And I'm kind of a sucker for infiltration stuff.
Has more kind of other guest stars in it, too.
Yeah.
Although Duke had some bad guy stuff. It had, like, Destro's Mars Industries. It had Mercer in it.
But this is, like, Scarlet doing, like, a True Lies opening.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
It's that, plus there is a ninja tangle and all that. Yeah, so this story starts with Scarlet sort of doing a... She's supposed to be, like, observing only, but it's like a... It's like a mansion thing, meet and greet for, like, human traffickers, right? And so, and she's, like, clearly itching to, like, okay, permission to engage, and it's not happening, and might be surprised to learn that she ain't down with that.
Well, things go, you know, pear-shaped pretty quickly. Yep.
Someone else she knows is there, and I think we can say, because this character is going to be prime throughout the series, is Jinx.
She's also on the poster that's been on the front.
It's on the
door.
Poster. And
this is Snowjob.
Yep,
Snowjob.
And the Jinx thing is specifically tying this story to the Arashikage Ninja Clan, which was so important in the original Real American Hero books from Marvel, and they're doing a big rethink on it. We don't know where all it's going, but like the little hints and clues that we're getting... that even, like, Stalker did a little training there leads us to think that, oh, that bit, the old bit where Stalker and Snake Eyes and Tommy, a.k.a. Storm Shadow, were in Vietnam together, will kind of get updated to Stalker maybe having done some training with their ninja clan at some point.
I think that's pretty cool.
But there's lots of interesting little backstory in here, including with Snowjob, too. It's a badass first issue.
It's action-packed. It's got great character moments. Pretty much everything we've come to expect from any of the Energon Universe books.
Yep.
They've all been great.
Yeah. We should go ahead and get you on board. Related to that, the Duke is... you know, there were two different covers of the Duke trade paperback. We mentioned this last week.
Yep.
Weirdly, they split them up over 2 weeks, and we had a little bit last week and more this week. Anyway, it's all in now. You can come in. There's even a choice right now between the two. And, you know, it's a great entry point into the series especially if you're a little bit more of a Joe guy than a Transformers guy, and you haven't picked up Transformers, which you should. But but if you want to come in through Duke, that's just cool too.
You should get a restock of Transformers Volume 1 this week, right?
Or issue 1?
No, just the trade. I know we have it on order.
Okay.
Because we've been sold out for a little bit, but you cannot go wrong. These books are great.
Yep.
We all have theirs.
I mean, if you only like indie slice of life stories, you might go wrong.
Nope. But we'll be seduced by...
by a toy comic?
Yeah, by a toy comic, yes.
Let's check in on Blood Hunt, Marvel's Vampires vs. Marvel Universe crossover that's going on. This week we've got the second issue of Blood Hunters, which is an anthology series.
Yep.
It's got a Hulk story, a...
Kate Bishop.
Yeah, and Nascenti writing a Kate Bishop story.
Yep.
And then the second part, there's one continuing story with, what's her name?
Bloodstone and Dagger.
Yeah. And also Frankenstein in that one.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
And then there's Blood Hunt Wolverine, which is a Wolverine miniseries.
Yep.
This was interesting. You don't read this one?
I did. It utilizes a lot of with the relaunch with Krakoa, that Wolverine, Ben Percy's Wolverine, the characters.
I have
and
not
stuff.
Read a Wolverine issue in a while, so but I didn't find myself lost. This feels like this is sort of berserker, rednecky Wolverine. He's in a bar. These military vampires keep coming after him.
Yep.
And
for some reason,
there's like a National Guard unit that's been turned.
Huh.
There's like four of them. They come out of this bar, and he has a fight with them, and they seem to be ready for him. It's like someone is setting vampires on him, and then he teams up with this woman who was from a vampire hunting clan who got turned into a vampire. Now she's the last of her clan and is also a vampire hunter. And this all goes back to Wolverine number 1 from 2020.
Yeah, so the Ben Percy stuff.
I did not know this character at all, but I thought they did a good job introducing her.
Early on in that run of Ben Percy, he basically had Wolverine going up against vampires.
Ah, that makes sense.
That's where he met this priestess. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That eventually got turned into a vampire. And the way he saves her, I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And it's mentioned here, and I think it's just a fun little nugget of coolness. And then, it's just an action flick, Wolverine chopping heads.
Yeah. And the reveal at the end of who the bad guy is going after him, it's as good as the one in Cat in the Avengers where they reveal that it was Baron Blood.
Yeah, I like this one.
I like that quite a bit.
Yep.
There's also Venom, although I've not been reading the Venom tie-ins, but there are three Blood Hunt. Continue to really enjoy the Blood Hunt story.
Yeah, I am too.
You know, I kind of want to read the Venom one. I feel like Venom could quite unleash on the vampires.
But it's not Eddie anymore. It's his son, and it's...
Boo.
Not, yeah, that, I'm sure it's good. I'm an Eddie fan.
Eddie. sorry, we're bracing because we're probably going to talk about the Venom 3.
Oh, we're definitely going to talk about it.
This week also sees the launch of Ultimates, the team book in the Ultimate Universe.
Is it fair to still call it, say that it's Ultimate Avengers, basically?
It is, yeah. Okay. Yep. It's interesting. I was not looking forward to this. I kind of was like, I don't know if I want to see another Ultimates.
Weirdly, I don't know any of the creators. It's not Hickman.
Dennis Camp is not somebody I know. Juan Fragueri is not somebody I know.
But the artwork is good.
It's really good. So this the basics of this team are that Tony Stark, a.k.a. Iron Lad for some reason, not Iron Man.
I think
Man.
He's like a younger version of Tony Stark.
But still,
Stark.
Iron Man. Iron Lad's weird. And this version of Doom, who is Reed Richards, they are trying to build an Avengers. They've got Cap, they've got a Thor, they got beat up, the Maker destroyed Tony Stark's pen, fired a laser weapon from space, blame it on them. So they're all being looked upon as terrorists.
Yep.
And they're trying to figure out what to do about this. And they're invoking time travel and stuff. They're like, we're gonna go back in time and prevent this from happening. But at the same time, this also gets a little bit into what Tony Stark's been doing, giving powers to people. Like, he gave Spidey his powers. And there's two longtime Avengers who are getting their chance to be heroes in this.
I thought that part of the story was actually really, really
good. I liked that quite a bit. I thought that was really good.
Because it deals with a character wrestling with the idea of becoming a hero and learning everything that has happened to him in another universe and kind of weighing, will that happen to me, essentially?
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very interesting
conundrum. This has come up in interesting ways over the years in comics, you know, with all people seeing alternate universe versions of themselves. It makes me also sometimes wonder, would I become a dictator in an alternate universe if I had any sort of power whatsoever?
Yes. Yes, you would.
You think?
Yeah.
You don't think, like, innate goodness, though?
No.
Probably not?
No.
Okay.
Dictator, for sure.
Dictator for life, yo.
I think if you've been enjoying any of the Ultimate books, like Black Panther, Spider-Man.
It's a given people are going to check this one out.
I hope so. I thought it was a great first issue.
Yeah, it's a really good first issue. I think it's a good setup.
It'd be fools to leave it.
The X-Men is about to get a big relaunch. And that means they're closing out the Krakoa era with Uncanny X-Men number 700, a.k.a. X-Men 75. I'm not sure how this math all works.
Yep.
I'm reading X-Men 300.
X-Men 35.
X-Men 35, not 75.
What? 35. Whatever. None of these numbers mean anything.
I like to be very precise. But you know what, by the way...
This is the Krakoan epilogue issue.
Yeah, this is the epilogue.
Weirdly, there is a Ninja Turtle special this week that does the same thing. A little bit of old, a little bit of new.
Yeah. But this is sort of like...
But this is like the flippy flip.
Basically setting the table for all the coming X books being launched.
Yep.
A swan song to Krakoa, giving it kind of its finale.
And then you pointed this out to me, Nick, like in the last 10, 20 pages or whatever, 10, 50 pages, they kind of set the chessboard for the new characters as the new series are beginning.
It specifically like cites like where Kitty Pryde is and what she's doing.
Was she working as a, like...
She's, like, opened her
like
own bar.
Like a barista or something like that?
It's
or was
like
it
a bar.
Okay, she used to bartend...
She was a bartender during the
Extreme X-Men days. X-Men
she basically is wanting to step away from the X-Men. Like, that'll happen, but, you know.
5 minutes later.
I like that Rogue and Gambit were on a second honeymoon in Mexico. Yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yep.
There was just some fun ideas in there, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what Gail Simone and the rest of the new teams bring to the X titles.
Agreed.
I'm a little burnt out on Krakoa, so
enjoy your time now, Rogue and Gambit, before that big Sentinel comes and steps on him.
We've got My Adventures with Superman number one, which we all love this cartoon.
This comic is a delight,
and this comic is written by one of the showrunners, I think.
Sophie Campbell.
Josie Campbell.
Josie Campbell. Sorry.
It's set between seasons, and yep. From what I read, it was based on a plot that they just didn't have time to incorporate into the first season.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I think it does it justice. It's a
Well, there is a pretty classic Justice League bad guy who shows up here, and then they do kind of an interesting riff on it. The if you haven't watched My Adventures with Superman, first of all, fix that. You should.
We'll really be talking good. About it a little bit later too.
They did a lot where like Kryptonian technology is sort of at the center of all the superpowers, and so centering sort of technology and their sort of government, the government task force in this story, I thought really worked. Also, the other thing that works about this is it is all about Clark and Lois and Jimmy and their interactions. And their interactions, particularly with some of the cast of the Daily Planet News,
right,
including sort of himbo Steve Lombard, who is a delight.
Yeah, he's been great in on the show, and I don't think I've ever said that about any version of Steve Lombard. No. Sometimes he's a solid foil, but I've never thought he was great until this.
Yeah.
By the way, the art in this I thought was exceptional.
It's really good.
And like, not to knock another book, but like X-Men 97, when I was flipping through that, The story may be good, but I thought that the art looked a little small. And this has, like, energy like it should for that kind of show.
Yep, agreed.
We've got a couple Image books. There is Falling in Love on the Path to Hell. This is Jerry Duggan.
Yep.
And artist is... Is it Gary Brown?
It's pretty nice artwork.
I'm trying to see who the artist is. It's really very pretty.
Gary Brown.
It is Gary Brown.
Very,
okay.
Very last page.
Right? It's almost... I believe a British artist.
Okay. It's Gary spelled with two R's, so yes. It's a little offbeat. So I only know, I made a sign for it, and the premise sounded interesting and might intrigue some people. It looks like early on this kind of Old West gunfighter dude and a lady samurai, I think existing in the same era. Yep. Both through various means are going to die. They're going to get killed, but that's not the end of their story because they find themselves in a purgatory of sorts, but it's not like some specific biblical purgatory. In fact, it seems like it's maybe like run by other fallen warriors or something like that.
Okay.
And they have to in some way figure out what their next step will be, you know, and I think it's like one of these where like, oh, this afterlife is not good.
But are they going to fall in love?
I believe that is built into it.
I mean, it's in the title. It says falling in love. If they don't, it's false advertising, and they can sue every comic shop.
You know what? I kind of like on the logo where they have the word hell, there's a negative image of two skeletal hands reaching for each other. It's very sweet.
There's also, we've got Precious Metal. Is this a sequel, or is this by the same creative team?
I believe it's a prequel.
Okay.
I thought it was just set in the world of Little Bird.
I guess what we're saying is we're not 100% sure.
We're not 100% sure.
But this from what I gather,
from the world of Little Bird, right?
I mean, I have to say just right off the bat that the artwork is amazing.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It reminds me of, I mean, everything from Daniel Warren Johnson to Aaron Cooter to God, who are all those artists? Jeff Darrow and those guys, who's doing the Batman of Gotham Gargoyle, whatever Gargoyle of Gotham, yeah, Raphael Krampa.
We still haven't seen the third issue of that, have we?
No.
Yeah, okay. Something's maybe a foot there.
he's a slow artist.
I can definitively tell you, this is from the world of Little Bird.
Okay.
It is set 35 years before the events of Little Bird Volume 1.
Pretty cool, like I said.
Yeah. You don't always have to be right.
Just never doubt me again. Otherwise, I'll go ahead and become a dictator on this world.
It is phenomenal artwork.
So yes, but I know that there is this element of kind of dark futurism in it where America has become, like, I think, a sort of a dictatorial empire, which, you know, I don't know how we could imagine something like that happening when we've always been on the right and true path since Jesus fought for us in the American Revolution.
Right. Dave, you gotta start reading American history books.
I have to admit, I kind of want to check this out, just if nothing else, based on this art, which is kind of psychedelic. It also reminds me, there's visual iconography I can recognize from, like, actually from Nausicaa, which I was talking about earlier, from Miyazaki's comic. There are graphic novels of him back when.
There's this eyeball man towards the back, and I'm sure he shows up prior to
that. Look at the cityscape.
But he's cool looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that the eyeball man is actually specifically that reminded me of something from Miyazaki's Nausicaa manga that he did in like the 80s and 90s. Nick, did you see that cityscape?
I did not, but I'm looking at it that as you're showing me. This
insane.
Is
insane.
This is kind of on Brandon Graham kind of level.
Yeah.
In that kind of ballpark.
So
this looks really interesting.
Yeah, it's a surreal kind of futurism. There's like heavy metal-ish type vibes to it as well. Anyway, I believe if a person were to flip through Precious Metal, they would know if it's for them or not. What else do we got this week?
Then we've got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Alpha.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is about, 10 pages, less than half of it, is Jason Aaron's first swing at the Turtles. He's going to be doing a series of one-shots with really good artists, and then he'll be doing a miniseries.
I'll say this: this 10 pages is drawn by Chris Burnham, who
is doing the Donatello one shot, probably.
I believe so. Chris Burnham has done a ton of stuff over the years, but I remember him mostly from like Batman. Was it Batman Inc. or was he?
Yeah, he was on.
He was working with Morrison for a little bit.
Was it Batman Inc. or Batman and Robin?
Batman and Robin. He's super talented.
He's a good artist.
I don't give too much away in this because it's a short story. But it is basically it's a different take on the world of sort of mutant animals of TMNT.
Yeah. It is the first glimpse of the new continuity that will emerge. Because, like, okay, so the bigger story after this is, like, kind of an outro story of some of the other characters in the current IDW universe. But, yes, this is the first glimpse at the relaunch. And there is a definite something different about the mutated animals and stuff in this setting. It's kind of dark, like, pretty dark. But it's an interesting, it is an intriguing 10-page tease.
Yeah.
And let me say, you do get to see some some very cool turtle moves in this.
Yeah.
But the circumstances that leads to it is kind of strange and dark, and I don't want to reveal anything about it. No, I think it's funner.
I really liked it
to find it out. It bodes well for the new series.
What's interesting is the Donatello one shot is the last one coming. It's coming in October. Oh, so this is a glimpse, because Raphael is coming in July. But it appears that the four Ninja Brothers will be separated in the open, in the outset.
So they're doing a little bit of like the Avengers format too, which is we're going to see them separately before, and also what they're doing like with G.I. Joe right now.
Right. Now we did. I mentioned this early on, but we should just reiterate the artists on these one shots. Joelle Jones is doing Raphael. Raphael Albuquerque is doing Michelangelo. Cliff Chang is doing Leonardo.
Wow.
And Chris Burnham on Donatello.
Those are like to a man are like and woman are great artists.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, those crazy. Are all great artists. And then I forget who's doing the main book. I don't know. I'm sure it's been announced. I was looking to see if it was on here, but I don't see who the artist is. But I'm very much looking forward to what Jason Aaron's going to do with this.
Yeah. Aaron's been doing good stuff for me lately.
We'll see. Has he
wrapped up his Batman thing? His Batman space thing?
I don't think so. I think it has one more issue.
I think that's running a little bit late, too.
It is also running a little late.
I mean, I'll allow it.
I think that's probably the artist.
He was very busy writing his Uncle Scrooge.
Yeah, he's actually doing all these projects that actually interest me, finally.
Well, here's the thing. I think Jason Aaron probably has. I mean, he did that three-issue Action Comics run.
Yep.
I think he probably wrote all this like a year ago, and he's just waiting on artists to finish stuff.
Yep. He's just crammed right
Jason in the Aaron pandemic. Is living life right now. He's I'm going to do a Uncle Scrooge. Let's me do Ninja Turtles.
Sure, yeah. Why not? Monster High has its first comic, and it's a Pride comic. This is, if you don't know the Monster High, it's a series of dolls, but I guess Serena was telling us about Liz yesterday. They all have sort of punny names.
Yeah. It's an Addams Family-ish kind of thing. Yeah. It's all monsters and werewolves and vampires and stuff like that.
Anyway, I don't think there's any crossover between goth and gay, so it's probably a pretty unsuccessful. This won't be a very successful issue, but if you happen to be one of those rare outliers who likes goth stuff and gay stuff, we have a comic for you.
Yeah.
I didn't know Monster High was as popular as it.
Very popular. I remember
them from years ago.
Yeah. I feel like it's probably like the kind of cool girly dolls line sort of thing. Where Barbie is sort of as the mainstream, although, you know, I'm sure she's more avant-garde since the movie. She's a little more indie, and she's probably part of a Marxist collective right now.
And all the Barbies, they've never done, like, a vampire Barbie?
I don't think so. I don't think they veer into the black magic, to the dark arts of Satan.
I feel like they should.
Well, I mean, you know, a little time. Sabrina will get them there.
Goth Barbie.
But she doesn't need to, because Monster High has taken up that space. Sure. What else we got?
Another Pride special, right?
If you like weird stuff and gay stuff, which again, very small crossover there. Rachel Pollack was, I think, maybe the first trans author at DC Comics. She took over for
as Grant far as Morrison I know,
after
yes.
Doom Patrol. She died recently, and
taking over after Grant Morrison on Doom Patrol, by the way, has to be one of the most thankless tasks probably anyone has ever engaged in.
But this is a DC Pride special celebration of Rachel Pollack, which reprints one of her issues of Doom Patrol, and then her one shot about Brother Power the Geek, which was what they called Vertigo. I forget what they bit, but it's Mike Allred on art.
Yeah,
And it's a one shot about, you know, consumer culture and that kind of thing.
Yeah, Brother Power was like an old character from like a '60s comic, who was kind of like almost the way Howard the Duck was meant to like reflect '70s stuff. That was DC doing a little bit of subversive commentary on like '70s kind of flower power and hippie stuff too. Yep. So this would have been like a '90s re-examination or deconstruction of that.
And then there's a new story by a writer named Joe Corallo that brings back one of her characters in a new story with Robot Man.
Are there any remembrances of?
No,
of
unfortunately
her?
Not. There's a piece by her editor Stuart Moore that opens it that I think is a reprint from something, but. There's not like a real big like memory. It's just basically a reprinting some stuff that's damn near impossible to find.
Yeah. But anyway, that was very cool.
I remember it was our ex-staffer Anna's one of her favorite
she
runs.
She loves that run.
Yeah. Underrated era.
Peter Milligan has a book at Boom. At first blush appears to be a sort of noir thriller, but there is a weird meta twist, as you would expect from anything with Peter Milligan.
It is called Profane.
It's called Profane. Second issue of The Boy Wonder by Junie Ba. That was the sort of alternative comics take on the various Robins. This one has Red Hood featured in it. Second issue of Get Fury. I really like the second issue of Get Fury.
I didn't get a chance to read it, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I read it too. It's good.
There's a kind of a big reveal about the premise I thought was important too.
Yep. It also seems to be touching on something from the previous
Fury series.
Yeah. You know, I know that the Punisher tends to bring out a lot of, I'm going to say, right-wing loonies.
Yep.
But it's funny, when as Ennis writes it, I think because there's no sense of irony, they don't recognize that it is a savage critique of America.
Yes, it is.
Where you will see plans in Vietnam that are being funded by, you know, heroin-run, you know, like... heroin rings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like worse stuff. Like it's messed up. And Garth Ennis is doing a pretty good job in this one.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. New issue of Birds of Prey. And worth mentioning, what if the penultimate What If Aliens number 4. We all read this, we all enjoyed it. It is such a funny, weird book.
Yes.
Like it's
nothing
dark
has really
comedy.
Changed for it since that first issue. Other than it really, it's kind of gotten a little more comfortable in its own bones. But as we said, Burke in this is the, you know, what if Burke had lived?
Yeah.
And it sort of chronicles him, I guess, like roughly at the age that I think Paul Reiser is now.
Like 70s.
Yeah, where he's like trying to sort of, you know, reconnect with his estranged daughter. He's trying to find some semblance of, a decent end to his career, which has been, you know, he took the blame for all the stuff in Aliens. And there's some stuff with a wife who was terminally ill. So there's a little bit of pathos in there, but mostly this is a weird little dark comedy where he will occasionally accidentally get somebody killed, and he's like, I didn't mean to do that, basically. He's a little bit more Paul Reiser than he is Burke at times. But I have to say, it's a very endearing combo.
If you told me that I needed a Mad About You meets Aliens book in your life, I would not have believed you.
So however, Paul Reiser, he is, as he's gotten older, he did a very, very bad show that was like the Paul Reiser show that was called kind of his version of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
It was not great. But he has found a niche as like a curmudgeon, as like a lovely, because he was in that show Reboot.
Yep.
Where he played an older guy with an estranged daughter.
Uh-huh. Something going on here.
So I just looked. He has two sons, one of them is writing this with him. Yeah. And I'm like, are they working some shit out? They just like gender flip it, but it's...
I didn't watch it, but I remember you saying that they're Mad About You...
The Mad About You reboot was great.
It was good.
It had a lot to do with him dealing with his estranged daughter.
So there's a running theme here.
That actually was. This was his daughter who was going off to college.
You know, yeah.
They were dealing with empty nesters. But there, Paul Reiser definitely is. He's got two kids, both sons. It sounds like he's interested in exploring the tension between an older father and younger kids. That's interesting.
I'm just saying, I did not expect to want to buy an Aliens collection when it comes out. I'll buy this one.
I think you had your finger on it last week, or last time we talked about this, when you said like they're doing something different.
Yeah. It's something different that Aliens.
It's not just aliens in the Arctic or aliens in some other time period of history or something like that. It's actually something kind of darkly funny and and different. So I'm here for it too.
Yeah. And then we've got some graphic novels. Any other single issues before I move on?
I have a few strays I think I wanted to mention, just some second issues and things, but. There's like the second issue of that Black Label. You mentioned that?
Yep.
All right. If you're going
to
be
Dave's
that
not
way.
Even listening to me.
Okay, everything else I've got is trades.
All right. Nick, any other single issues?
There's a second issue of Deathstalker, the Tim Seeley
Conan-like
book was continues to entertain. Zdarsky finishes up his Batman versus Robot Batman story arc.
Right.
Is it real
Batman?
Check the bats?
Real Batman, digital Batman.
Digital Batman. And then Amazing Spider-Man 51, which...
I heard he's the Green Goblin now.
He's now the Green Goblin. Or actually, I think he just calls himself Spider-Goblin.
Spider-Goblin.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K, y'all.
Yes, essentially so. But yes, then there are some graphic novels. There's quite a few of them. The big one for me, however, is the Barda graphic novel.
It's part of DC's YA line.
Yes.
It's Ya Line.
Ya Line.
It's from the creators of Check Please, Ngozi Okazu? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Was that his kind of like gay-friendly hockey romance?
Her.
Okay.
But yes, it is the gay hockey romance. And this sees Barda sort of on Apocalypse, dealing with, like, working with Granny Goodness and all the that entails.
Is it 10 things I hate about fire pits?
Yes. But then her falling in love with Scott Free and kind of how she deals with that. I haven't read it yet. Our other stuff for Serena said it was quite good. Just flipping through it, it looks really interesting. I see LaSheena. I see Matt Harriet.
Right, so you got the female Furies in there.
I hope that the female Furies are like the girls in Mean Girls.
I mean, that would be great. I'd be down for it.
On Tuesday, we torture people.
I'm excited to read this.
Get in, losers. We're going torturing.
There's also some interesting... DC has this new line of compact editions.
Oh,
right. Oh yeah, they're like the digest-sized versions of like some very famous stories.
I was expecting to be in a familiar digest size, like Barda or maybe even like some of the other digest-y things. But these are like novel-sized.
Yeah,
right. It's like the old like sort of like Penguin Classics books.
Yeah,
for books.
So they're doing the first two we've seen. They're doing a lot of these.
Yeah.
First one they did is the Court of Owls, the start of the Scott Snyder. Batman New 52 run.
A rare creation of an iconic threat that took.
Yeah. And Watchmen, which I think all of us are like, Watchmen kind of needs the room to breathe. That art really needs room to breathe.
Yeah.
But if you want to read classic comics for $10 a shot, you have a pretty good deal.
I agree.
You can get Watchmen in so many different formats at this point.
If you're young and have good eyes...
Yeah, I think that's true.
You can probably read these.
That's true.
And then when you're older, you can buy oversized hardcovers like us.
I want a big Treasury edition only that's got to have a large size block print.
DC also had a couple notable volume ones this week. Mark Waid's Shazam with art by Dan Mora. And Tom Taylor's Titans.
Also Green Lantern.
And also Green Lantern. And
I wanted to mention that Quest book from Jonathan Luna.
Yeah.
Which I need to read this to the end, but this was like...
I have read it to the end. It's good.
Yeah, and we talked about at least the first issue or two on it. It's I know a sort of Eastern Asian themed fantasy adventure.
Yeah.
That, you know, at least as the quick keynote, something like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sort of level types of fantasy would be a fitting way to describe it. But it looks cool. I still like a lot of the stuff that the Luna brothers do.
Yeah.
Although this is it's solo the Luna. Brother.
They broke up.
With Crystal Wood, who is, I think, his other somewhat frequent collaborator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the two brothers, they broke up. They're not doing stuff anymore. One of them's mad at the other. I don't know.
All right. There's still Luna talent.
Yes.
Lots of Luna talent to go around. Luna here, Luna there.
We got the third volume of Ryan North's Fantastic Four, which I know the two of y'all went off on.
Yep.
I still love every issue of this. It is.
I'm willing to say it's a good book.
It's the best run of Fantastic Four for me.
Yeah.
I rank it as my favorite FF.
Ever.
In the history
of the world.
In the history of FF.
Interesting. Yep. Interesting. We'll talk about that later.
John Byrne is very sad.
Jack Kirby is very sad.
That's true.
Walt Simonson is very sad.
I mean, Walt Simonson might be. Jack Kirby doesn't feel anything anymore.
You don't know.
He's one with the source wall, okay? You don't know. You don't know what
he feels. Then I don't think he's
sad. He has on the Galactus hat now. Only he's smoking... It's Galactus with a cigar.
When I say that I like Ryan North's Fantastic Four, a single tear rolls down the source wall's face.
I'm going to get that guy.
I don't want to fight Jack Kirby.
That guy was... He was made to fight Nazis.
He's a two-fisted cartoonist. He'll beat me up.
Yeah.
That's true.
And then we've got Spider-Man Reign. We should preface this by saying the three of us all don't like this book.
It's true.
Yep. But that's Reign spelled...
R-E-I-G-N.
Right. It's not Reign like it's raining outside.
I mean, it is raining like dark. King's,
it's like a King's Reign.
So this is Dark Knight Returns for Spider-Man. It is a darker book.
I believe we talked about it on the podcast, you know, like 10 or 15 years ago.
We probably have. The trade paperback is back in print because they are doing a sequel.
Yep.
Art is really nice.
Right. None of us would say that Cary Andrews is not a talented artist.
No. I would just say I question his choices.
Yes.
Sure.
It has a lot of that, the old grimdark in it. If you're curious, look up, you can Google and find out about how MJ gets killed in that first one. Just Google that.
Yep.
And then you might see, like, why we're not as huge on it. But it's going to get a sequel at some point.
It is beloved by many people. A sequel soon. It's coming out in the next couple weeks.
Yep. And if you are like, you know what? I like some Grimdark in my Spider-Man. I'm a Venom Spider-Man guy. I liked when he turned into Green Goblin lately. I like occasionally when he becomes a vampire or some shit.
Well, yeah.
Then
not when he has six arms. You hate that.
then you know what? This could be the one for you. We're not going to judge.
No. I mean,
in front of you.
All right, that's it for us on comics. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and talk about a whole bunch of trailers. All right, we got a bunch of new trailers that dropped. We watched all of them. They're for largely ridiculous movies.
Yes,
I actually have to say it's one of the better batch of trailers we've watched in a little while.
They were all entertaining in some way, shape, or form. Yeah.
Let's kick it off by talking about Venom: The Last Dance.
Alrighty,
man.
Venom: The Last Dance actually features a dance in it.
That's true.
It shows is she like the grocer?
Yeah, she's the owner of the grocery.
But clearly,
store.
She's in Vegas or something now.
Yeah, and she does show up in the movies regularly.
Yep.
And like Venom is like ballroom dancing with her for briefly a few seconds. Don't know if it's a dream sequence. It could actually really happen. These movies
really
are bonkers.
Yeah.
And Nick, I think what I would say is we're the two people who watch these movies in here. Randy doesn't watch them.
Nope.
Sure.
And but I think we would say there was a pretty sharp drop off. The first one was like kind of wild fun.
Yep.
The second one was kind of grating, not fun.
Well, and it should have been a home run. You had
Woody Harrelson as Carnage, and they had set it up so well,
and they hugely dropped the ball.
It turns out that what's his name, maybe not a great director.
You're talking
Serkis, Andy
Gollum?
Serkis. Yeah.
Andy Serkis, maybe not the best.
Yeah, is he doing this one too?
No, this is actually a female director, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay.
It's one of her first, I think.
Well, potentially she still can she can beat Andy Serkis.
However, I got a lot of laughs out of this.
Yes, the kind of like, this is so over the top, it's hilarious and fun.
Him trying to say in unison, "We are Venom."
He's trying to like
gag.
Scare some guys. Really, right before Venom eats them.
Yeah,
early
you do.
On, literally eats their heads. But he's trying to do the "We are Venom" line and have the Venom symbiote say the last part scary.
Yep.
Only the Venom, the symbiote cuts to the chase. It jumps in.
Well, take this for what it's worth. The director helped write the other two Venom movies.
Okay.
As well as 50 Shades of Grey.
Sure.
And Saving Mr. Banks.
Don't know what that
and
is.
And Cruella, which was really good.
Saving Mr. Banks was a Tom Hanks.
Okay. Saving Mr. Hanks.
Sure.
Mr. Hanks. That's the writer. Sorry. It's not the director. No, that is the director. Has she directed nothing else?
I don't think so. Like I said, I think this is her first feature film.
Okay. All right.
Venom 3 is a weird one to come in on, but you know what? Mike Flanagan did the second Ouija movie, and that guy's a good guy. But yes, there's a bunch of other crazy stuff. There is, like, Venom dancing. There's
a horse joke that I don't know if I've laughed even harder.
Because they need to symbiote up a horse at some point, and you're just going to want to see the trailer on that one. There was also stuff that looked very dumb. I believe the central threat seems to be, like, that the
symbiote planet is, like, invading.
Symbiote, full mega symbiotes are kind of coming. They seem like... You know, they seem bigger. Like, they're the equivalent of, like a little dinosaur in size. And they do that scream thing with it where they shake, make the camera shake or whatever, like everything has for, like, about 20 years now.
I don't have high hopes for this, but it looks better than the second one. And that's saying something.
Maybe if it's over, like, a 60 on Rotten Tomatoes,
it's possible. You and I could go catch it.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on it. I also don't necessarily have high hopes, but... solidly entertaining trailer.
Yes.
If you've been following these dumb movies,
he's weird.
I'd recommend checking him out. Oh yeah, I think he was good casting.
He's good casting as Venom. I mean, but he's a weird dude.
Yep, he's a weird dude. We are all agree. Even Randy.
Yep.
We'll agree.
Yep. Y'all have fun with that. I will be not seeing this one.
Well, in 10 years, when they're on Venom 7 or Venom 5, you'll show back up and be like, "I will join the Venom Collective."
No, I don't like that.
Like Fast and the Furious.
I don't want that.
You'll be sucked in.
I do not want that. We've got the trailer for Wolves. Not Wolves. Wolves. Which This is an Apple movie, but it's going to be in theaters.
Yep.
It has George Clooney and Brad Pitt.
Those guys are famous.
As fixers.
As Winston Wolfe. They're each Winston Wolfe.
From Pulp Fiction,
they both get called to the same cleanup thing.
Yep.
Like body disposal, basically. Disposal, yeah.
And then it turns into a whole other thing.
Yep. You had me at Clooney and
Fred. Is it possible that, by the way, that Tarantino, you know, with that one character, is actually going to change the nature of, like, sort of special ops, and anybody who, like, change it, who does that kind of thing will become a wolf now?
No, maybe so.
What if Tarantino's the bad guy who shows up as on-screen character?
Listen, if Tarantino shows up, he's always the bad guy. just by virtue of being Tarantino.
In life as well as in film. This is either going to be real fun or real dumb.
So, it looks like the deal is that was it almost like a double booking?
Yeah.
Like, although I bet it's probably some intentional thing, but, they both show up and, you know, assume that Clooney is kind of like the old pro and, Brad Pitt's not some, like, little young punk, but...
They're the same age.
What's that?
They're the same age.
Are they really the same age?
Close.
Oh, I guess just Clooney with the white hair, whiter hair.
Pitt's gotten older.
Okay. But, hilariously, they also do think of themselves as very different, and they hate each other.
Yep.
But, like, everybody keeps noticing that they're, like, finishing each other's sentences, and they're, like, the same guy. Occasionally do this.
Yeah.
I feel like...
So you're secret partners is what you're saying?
We may be wolves.
Yeah, we're wolves.
It's a pretty good trailer.
I love these two. I'm putting money that... some Tarantino thing will show up because they both did in Tarantino films.
It's true.
Who's the director?
I don't know. I saw the director actually.
No, I didn't pay attention. Let's see.
Let's just see who's directing Wolfs. John Watts. That's right.
Oh right.
Spider-Man. But also he did they did Cop Car.
Yep. Which I actually liked Cop Car.
I've not seen Cop Car, but I did quite like his Spider-Man's. He dropped out of Fantastic Four to do this, I guess. So. That'd be good.
If he wanted to get away from doing superhero movies, that's his prerogative. And doing a movie with Brad Pitt and George Clooney is not a bad paycheck.
We saw the trailer for Kinds of Kindness. This movie is directed by Yorgos
Lanthimos.
Really? Is that his name?
Yeah, Yorgos Lanthimos. Okay.
You could tell me whatever and I would believe you. I just know it's hard to pronounce.
This guy did The Lobster, Poor Things, The Favorite.
I've seen Poor Things and loved it, and now I want to rewatch the rest of his stuff.
He's an interesting guy. He's got a weird sense of humor. He is not, he does not shy away from the sex
and
nudity. He is kind of a, I'm just going to show everything.
Yeah.
He's got a wry sense of humor and apparently... Emma Stone loves to work with him at this point.
Yeah, she's going
to
be in all this stuff.
Yeah, it seems like she's like going to be the muse. I need to see one of his movies just so I can see what his vibe is.
I would really recommend watching Poor Things.
I would as well. So the cast includes Emma Stone, Jesse Plemons, Willem Dafoe, Margaret Qualley, Hong Chau, Hunter Schafer, a bunch of people who I was like, oh, these are all good people.
I love Hong
Chau. Let me read you the description from IMDb of what it's about.
Okay.
A man seeks to break free from his predetermined path. A cop questions his wife's demeanor after a return from a supposed drowning, and a woman searches for an extraordinary individual prophesied to become a renowned spiritual guide. Y'all remember the Paul Thomas Anderson movie Magnolia?
Yeah.
This feels like that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, so there's no story. There's 100 stories to this.
Right. Maybe, but
perhaps they all join up like a Seinfeld episode.
Perhaps. Anyway,
or perhaps the real journey...
The trailer looks great to me. This looks like a lot of fun.
I'm probably going to see this in theaters.
I feel like I can't judge this trailer. Like, it's an interesting trailer, but I can't judge it until I actually see what this guy's movie is like.
Yeah, that's fair.
The snippets don't quite tell me his thing.
And I think that's the thing. I think Nick and I both seen Poor Things and really enjoyed it.
Right.
And I love The Favorite.
And I think that's part of why we're excited for the next thing he does.
Fair enough.
But yes, I do want to watch The Favorite and The Lobster.
Yeah.
We got the trailer for Moana 2. Which is just kind of a little teaser.
Yeah, it is the definition of a teaser. It does not tell you 100% what it's about.
It's a sort of, let's see the cast again. Let's see how CG has improved since then.
And it gives a snippet of story. Apparently, like, Moana is, like, going... like, joining all of the bands...
called by the gods to do something.
Basically, join all of the bands, like, together as like one...
The tribes?
Yeah, all the different tribes as one. Cool idea. I thought the animation looked interesting. I loved the space or the whale under the water.
Yeah, yeah, it was one of those like whale sharks, I think. But he had like what looked like tribal symmetry.
It was visually striking,
like tattooed.
I think Randy was saying that he doesn't.
It looks great. I'm not sure I need a Moana 2.
Right.
Yeah,
I think. Do we all agree? Moana, pretty good movie.
Pretty good movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I would agree with that.
I mean, do I need it? No. Will I go see it? Probably.
I might. We'll see. And then we saw the trailer for Alien Romulus. This is the full trailer for this. The next Alien movie. I think, Dave, we've talked about this in the past. There's not been a good Alien movie since, like, 1982.
1986. That was Aliens.
Okay,
yeah.
That is almost 30 years.
Yep.
40 years.
But if you
40 years of... well, that was kind of a neat scene.
Yeah.
And then everything else a crushing disappointment.
Yeah.
But if you showed me this trailer and you're like, what alien is this? And I'm like, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection. It looks the same.
Right. Well, I can't quite tell.
And Fede Alvarez, I liked Don't Breathe. That was an interesting concept for a horror movie. I hated his Evil Dead. I hated it.
Interesting. This one that sounded like there was a following for this one, though, right?
Yeah, it was. He'll bring something interesting to this. I just don't know if I care at this point.
Right. There's some people traveling somewhere. Some aliens get loose. There's a little bit more facehugger chasing and interaction than we maybe usually get.
Yeah.
Like, but like, here's the thing. It's like, I feel like, the fairly definitive facehugger sequence outside of the initial kaboom chest-bursting thing was in Aliens.
Yeah.
It's the thing where Ripley is trying to spot it, running around in a hidden room before it gets to her or Newt.
Yep.
And, like, you see just how incredibly strong they are, which is utterly terrifying, you know, that they can get that tail around your neck and, like choke you unconscious easily. And also, like, you kind of can't exactly be chopping these dudes or you're going to be spraying acid everywhere. But, like, that was, again, in 1986, we saw it.
If this comes out and people
are
just
because they can CG that thing's, like, little tube feeder thing going inside somebody's mouth a little bit more visually these days.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's bringing anything to it.
If this comes out and reviews are like, oh, it does something interesting and different, and there's a new element that this trailer's not showing, I'd be like, okay, I'll watch it on digital or something.
Right. It is hard to imagine seeing this one in the theater.
I just, like, I'd rather have Paul Reiser do it.
Yes. If they made a movie of What If Aliens, first day.
Yes.
First day in the seats.
Yeah.
I think if this is like 90% up or above on Rotten Tomatoes, I'll consider seeing it in the theater.
Right. That's otherwise, what it would take for any alien movie to get me at this point.
It's got to be like almost everybody loves this.
Right. Mostly what we were saying off mic was this does what a lot of them do, which is kind of greatest hits things.
Yeah.
They reference the In Space No One Can Hear You Scream thing.
Which always makes me think of the meme about the guy who got the bad shirt that's like Alan in space. No one can hear you in space.
They do the fade-in of the alien logo.
They fade-in of the alien logo, which is based on the one from 1979.
Yeah.
So it has a callback.
It has a very strong feeling of, hey, kids, remember Alien? Didn't you like Alien? Oh, here's more Alien.
So, here's a quick question. There was one scene in it that I thought was kind of startling early on where it's somebody, and I was trying to figure out if this person was a synthetic, like a robot, like a, what's his name, who's...
Bishop.
Or Ash. Yeah. Because you see their, like, glowing red chest, or was there, like, some medical...
No, I think it was a medical device. Yeah.
It was a medical device over somebody's chest as the alien is trying to break through its ribcage.
Right.
And that was pretty startling looking,
the way they filmed it. You know, it's almost like if you had an X-ray or an MRI type thing
exactly
going while
was.
The alien's busting out. But it's still another version of an alien busting out, which we've seen 800 times.
Now, the thing is, we need to see the alien bursting on things other than chests.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Like an ankle. you know what else we don't usually see? We see the facehugger, and then we see the full-grown alien or a queen. We never see that in-between thing. I want to see
toddler
an alien
aliens.
That's like, yeah, about like 3 or 4 feet tall, kind of like running around like a little scary hobbit.
Yeah. I'm an alien!
You know, where you could probably, like, if you had a good crowbar, you could probably knock it around solidly.
Yeah. You just want to see... You want to say, you know, I think, if I can interpret for you.
Okay.
What you want to see is, like, a space mechanic taking a crowbar to a toddler alien.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you've got it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much exactly where I was headed.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
That would see on day one.
Yes, day one.
Day one. Do they erupt out of the chest and they like mature in like minutes or something?
Yeah, it's supposed to be fast.
Yeah, like it's like weirdly fast, but so much so that they never have shown us the in between stages.
No toddler aliens.
Give us a toddler alien, we can beat with a crowbar. And finally, non trailer, but some kind of notable news. They've cast their He-Man.
Right.
Nicholas Galitzine.
Yeah. He's a good actor.
Who is he?
He was in that new movie with Anne Hathaway that hit Amazon Prime, The Idea of You.
Okay.
It was really good.
Is this the daring one where she has an affair with a younger person?
Yeah, basically having an affair with a
what? Yeah. Who would sleep with like Anne Hathaway?
Now that she is a hideous old crone.
She's a crone.
She's 40 years old.
Oh my god.
Wow.
You know, I've been on a lot of Jordan Peterson message boards, there's a lot of some good men's rights stuff you know, like once they get past about 25, and Leo DiCaprio will back
up.
They've really lost all their appeal. That's
See,
how
now I'm, we sound like an Austin podcast.
Yeah, right. What are we talking about?
Nicholas Galitzine and He-Man.
Right. So he's a good actor.
He is, actually. I think he's pretty good.
But he does not look very He-Man-ish, is what I'm understanding.
Right. I don't know if I could... He looks very Prince Adam. I mean, he's played Prince
before.
Here's
the question, like... Prince Adam was like a weirdly swole prince.
He was.
I wonder, is it possible that they're going to like have him either get jacked up or they're going to like sort of CG him onto some He-Man swole body like the way they did Hulk with What's-His-Face?
You know
face?
Those sumo suits?
I believe I have heard that this He-Man movie is going to have like reveal that like Prince Adam is like living on Earth. He was like, you know, a prince in exile. Maybe doesn't know he's a prince. And we'll find out he's got this power to He-Man up and go back to it and save his planet or something like that.
I didn't even know of this He-Man's existence.
Me neither.
I think this is what I have heard through my Masters of the Universe grapevine, which I keep an ear to the ground on.
Okay.
And
I mean, sure.
And
I mean, I'm sure.
I don't know that I really want the Earth connection, although, as I was telling Randy off mic earlier, I believe in the old He-Man cartoon that King Randor and his wife came from Earth somehow.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how they managed to become royalty. Maybe they, you know, crossed some palms with, you know, a little green.
It was probably a lot of genocide.
And, but anyway, so there's a little bit, there's some precedent for it, I think. If my He-Man knowledge lore is
will, probably will, have the most He-Man today. Knowledge of anyone in this room.
Will Courtney Cox show up?
Will the principal from Back to the Future show up again?
Sure.
Anyway,
is it Gildor?
I Gwildor.
Gwildor.
Dumbass. Get it right. Gwildor. He has a name.
And a musical transportational device.
Yes, that's right. So yeah, I'm not what you call looking forward to this. It's good that there's a good actor in it, but yeah. Like, should he be doing a dumb toy movie? I don't know. Every once in a while, these things come through. You get like a solid movie, like Bumblebee or the Beast Wars thing one. But it could also just be an absolute stink fest.
I think the only way to get me to watch this would be to do it kind of like Barbie, where it's kind of meta and makes fun of it. Because I've got no love for that concept at all.
I think the best that they have done with it overall, as far as rethinks go, was the Kevin Smith one.
Yeah.
A little bit flawed, but they had a lot of good stuff.
It was all right. Chris Hemsworth is in talks to lead G.I. Joe times Transformers.
Sorry, say that again?
Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
Is in talks.
To lead
G.I. Joe times Transformers, or X-Transformers. Or
this would be a series of movies that continue. They did reveal the G.I. Joe's existence in the end of Beast Wars.
I think it's just one movie. I think it's like Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah.
Right, but like we presume it would be part of that line.
Yeah.
Chris Hemsworth, and we were thinking like Duke or something?
Probably, right? Although he's very Australian. Maybe he'll just play Outback.
I mean, he'd be better as Outback.
Or Rotondo.
No, he's going to play Duke.
I know,
he's
I like Hemsworth, I'm not sure.
He's playing Optimus Prime in the new Transformers 1.
That's weird.
Was Hemsworth the guy in Furiosa?
Yes.
So is he, like, instead of, he's going to be like, ready, steady, go, Joe!
Yeah.
Maybe he should play
Zartan. Hemsworth is at his best when he's playing kind of goofy.
Yeah.
And I don't really want that vibe from Duke.
Right. Unless that's maybe not how he's going to play it.
Yeah,
maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, he played serious military thing in that those Netflix movies, Extraction.
Yeah.
And they're solid. They were fine action films, but...
You know, the second live-action G.I. Joe movie was pretty solid.
Yeah, Retaliation. Yeah.
Retaliation. Yeah, and they, you know, they still kept some humor in there, so...
Mm-hmm.
I think you don't want to I don't want this to try and be Tom Clancy.
Right.
I think it needs to still have some of that same vibe of like the Bumblebee and Beast Wars, that Transformers stuff that still has some like fun energy to it.
Yeah.
But first of all, like, are we ready for G.I. Joe Transformers movie? They've been doing it in the comics. Can they
pull
it off on the big screen without that oversight from Robert Kirkman?
I don't know that they can.
Yeah,
I'll try it, but I don't have a lot of hope for this.
But if you told me that they're involved, which I could see them, like Hasbro bringing them in a little bit to sort of have some synergy between the properties, and why wouldn't you?
Marvel has shown that there's a fair amount to be drawn from having creator input.
But just the success of the Energon universe at this point, it is like across the board, like crazy numbers for if they brought some synergy to it, it would make sense. And I hope that they would have some insight to do that.
Yeah.
We'll see. Hollywood gets in its way.
All right. Lastly, this is a bit I'm excited about. Mike Flanagan is going to direct a new Exorcist movie. I want Mike Flanagan really just do Stephen King, Shirley Jackson, and who's the other person he adapts?
Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe.
Basically like classic ghost story piece stuff. Yeah.
But... I don't have much interest in a new Exorcist movie, but you tell me Mike Flanagan is doing almost anything. You tell me Mike Flanagan was directing the He-Man movie, I'd be like, oh, that'll be interesting. So, like, yeah, sure, whatever.
I like Flanagan. That last Exorcist movie, which I don't think either of you saw, I pressed play and I was sad.
So, I avoided it. It's weird because, like, I know the Omen prequel movie was actually apparently pretty good. You watched that one?
That was quite good, actually.
But, I don't really have any interest in this other than Flanagan's involvement. But, like, isn't that dude doing the Dark Tower movies? Where's...
Yeah.
It's Dark Tower series. I think for Prime.
Okay, yeah. Where's he even find the time for any of this? Sleep.
I mean, he may just go from set to set.
You think it's the cocaine?
It may be the cocaine.
He's probably on the cocaine.
Stephen King was there? Talk to him about
one of the dudes in Fall of the House of Usher was, like, a big cokehead, wasn't he? Who was
it? Oh, yeah. It was Elliot from
Elliot,
the team.
Yeah,
he was he was getting drugs from, I think...
one of the other characters.
The guy that... Oh, man. I forget his name.
Yeah, now I'm blanking
on it. From iZombie.
Oh, Clive.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I can't remember their names.
That was a fun series. Those are despicable people that were fun to watch.
Yep. Well, fun to watch them die.
Yep, fun to watch them die. And, you know, if you have to be killed, why not be killed by... What's her name?
Carla Gugino.
Verna,
because it's Raven backwards.
Yep. The fuck? What?
What? Yeah.
I forgot that.
That's messed up. I would rather have Flanagan do his own thing at this point.
Has he ever done his own thing?
He probably has an idea.
Because he always adapts stuff.
I mean, early in his career.
Okay, so Midnight Mass would be an example of something that was his own thing. It feels very Stephen King.
Yeah.
But it was original.
What was his original movie? The... In Absentia?
In Absentia, and Oculus.
Yeah, those were both good. I like In Absentia a lot.
Yep. I guess this was not his own thing because it was the sequel, but like his Ouija one was good.
Yeah, and I know there's probably a kernel of to make a good Exorcist film.
Sure. I think, honestly, the less it tries to, like, emulate the original, I think the better. But I wonder if he's thinking about, like, Dr. Sleep, which he did, which merged, tried to...
I mean, I think it accomplished...
Connect the book of The Shining with the movie of The Shining, and sequelize it as well. So it was doing a lot of extra work in there. I wonder if he has some notion of, like, yes, all these extra sequels have been bad, but I think I know the way to continue it and, you know... You know how, like, when you get a bunch of movies, like all those Halloween movies, and there's actually, like, three different continuities within the Halloweeniverse. Yep. Mm-hmm. But, like, the last few that they did, they pretty much extend... They purified the line so that it was just, like, original Halloween and then them. I wonder if he's going to try and do something like that. You know, there's only original Exorcist and me. That would almost be the best case scenario for me, at least, where I don't have to even consider that there's... And I haven't seen the other ones, like Exorcist 3, The Heretic. I know these all have, like, some scenes in it and things that people like, but I don't know that they're good movies.
Have there been a total of just four? The three and then the new one?
I think that might be right. Probably some other...
And then the TV show, right?
Was that?
Wasn't there an Exorcist TV show?
Yeah, there was.
Gina
that,
Davis?
Yeah, that was the one.
That was actually pretty good. That was quite good. So yeah. There are, you know, that's
the
exceptions.
That's the only one I'll allow.
Yeah, there are exceptions.
Anyway, yeah, cautious approval. We always like Flanagan, but, you know, kind of going into this one a little cautious.
Yep, for sure. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about a couple TV shows. All right, so we wanted to quick check in on My Adventures with Superman Season 2, which just started back up.
Yep.
Dave has been slacking because he's busy, I don't know, running some game for some jerks.
Yep. You're one of the jerks.
I am.
Right.
Always. but in this specific instance, yes, I am one of those jerks. Yes. But as a result, Dave has only seen the first episode. Yep. Nick and I have seen the first three.
Correct.
And
when did new episodes drop? Is it Friday?
Saturday midnight, I think.
Oh, right, because this is a Adult Swim thing?
Which is weird, because it doesn't feel Adult Swim-y.
No, it feels about as happy and awesome as you can get.
We all love Season 1. We talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
I think Season 2 came back pretty strong.
It did.
Superman, it's Superman with a kind of an anime vibe. And I would say, worth checking out, even if you're not like an anime person, the same way I would say that of, say, Avatar The Last Airbender.
For sure. Yeah.
And
Dave, where have you gotten to?
I got to the big stuff with Jor-El. And there was like a big sort of father-son moment, which I don't know quite where it goes.
Okay.
Did you get
the reveal that Jor-El told him about?
Yes, okay. I think.
That was where the first episode ends.
Does it? Okay.
Basically, confrontation with Waller and the ship and Jor-El.
So that first episode starts, it's Valentine's Day, and like it starts small because there's always fun soap opera stuff going on in it, and Clark is trying to figure out what to get for Lois, and he's going to kind of do traditional stuff, like, I'm just going to give her some flowers and candy or take her out to a nice restaurant, and Jimmy's like, oh my god, Clark, you're going to destroy this.
Doesn't Cat Grant, like, chime in? Like,
everybody does, in that kind of comical, like, we all overheard, the entire office overheard it, and we think that you're about to blow up your relationship.
Well, it also seems like people have been promoted. Lois is
at the end of the first season, they all made full reporter.
Yeah, they're all
full reporter. Jimmy, I had forgotten this.
Jimmy's rich.
He sold Flamebird to the Daily Planet, I think.
Yes,
that's like his app, basically.
Yes, and so he has been. And so the first episode, he keeps doing these extravagant things, and it keeps showing his net worth going down.
Yeah,
and right. I'm like, oh, that's going to deal with him. He's not going to be rich in the end of the season.
A little digital pop up shows, how many millions he has.
Yes.
But it is definitely not going to last long.
No, not at all.
Which is hilarious.
It's a good little running gag.
The heart of this is the Clark, Lois, Jimmy stuff. The fact that they all know that Clark is Superman, that Clark and Lois are dating. Like, they really moved into that stuff fast, and I think it works really well.
I think so, too.
Also, their central thing around Krypton being sort of that there's not a Batman that we're going to see in this show, or maybe we will eventually, but all of it is centered around Kryptonian technology and the government being interested in that. And so Parasite built something off of Kryptonian technology, and Alex, who is officially revealed to be Lex Luthor, is fascinated by the technology.
Right.
And so there's this nice bit. My only gripe is they are going full on evil Waller, and I hate seeing that.
That is the status quo for Waller.
That's just where we're at. I know. I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it either, but...
Makes the Justice League Unlimited one look soft and fuzzy. It
does, yeah.
What was I going to say? The big reveal about Krypton, they were not doing the big alien invasion thing, right? That's what it looked like, kind of on the surface. It looked kind of like that Invincible sort of vibe.
Yeah, it seems like maybe more Brainiac and Zod have teamed up, and they're doing that.
Yeah.
It was not... Yeah. Most of Krypton is gone.
You know what's interesting is, like, There's elements where his Jor-El or like his like hologram graphic version is doing a lot of stuff to help Superman in that first episode, and it reminded me a little bit of the Snyder thing, which I didn't really like. Who's that actor?
Russell Crowe
helping out. It was just a weird thing. I was like, I didn't really need it. But in this slightly more anime influenced one, where there's like some interesting themes about fathers and sons and stuff like that going on, I actually kind of liked it, and they got some touching moments together.
Yeah, agreed.
It was no surprise that this show, which is really very good, is better than Snyder Superman.
I don't want to say too much. I don't want to spoil things for Dave, but I will say we're starting to see some of the Superman family fill out. Yeah. I
know of at least one that was referenced. Dave. Yes. She was referenced in the first episode. Yeah. And I was like, well, I wasn't quite sure if they're going to go straight there or if it was just a name drop for later in the season or another season. But yeah, I was like, okay, if she's come up, it's happening.
I'm really digging it. I'm looking forward to more.
Yeah.
I also have been watching on Disney Plus Doctor Who.
Yep.
Which I talked about, I think, the movies. The Shuri Gatwa, who from Sex Education is now the Doctor.
Yep.
He's got a companion named Ruby Sunday, who is... she's kind of she reminds me a little bit of Rose Tyler, but where Rose was like in her early 20s and felt a little bit more worldly.
Uh-huh.
Ruby is this sort of sweet, kind of innocent girl who's like, she's an orphan. She doesn't know the truth about her mom. There's some mystery, the very, very Moffat and Russell T. Davies style mystery around her, who her mother is and that kind of thing. And Shuri Gatwa is, as the Doctor, more fabulous and fun than the Doctor has ever been. Like, it's closer to the Matt Smith Doctor than any of the other Doctors. But he is a delight.
Yep.
And he is that... You know, you want Doctor Who to sort of, like, wonder in the glory that is time travel and space travel and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, it's like despite how old he is, it's like he's seeing it all for the first time.
Right. And even though you sometimes have spooky episodes or serious moments and tragic stuff, a lot of times you want there to be this kind of, like, exploratory energy. It would be a wild and fun ride to go with the Doctor, and I gather he's doing pretty good with that.
Although
I know he also isn't completely in some of these.
So they're doing kind of the same thing. Do you remember how Blink, Tennant's barely in it?
Yep.
So
I heard that there was something maybe where literally Shuri was just like.
There have been two episodes.
There was some
so
scheduling
far.
Thing.
There's been three episodes where he's barely in it.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about... So the first two episodes back, one is called Space Babies, and it is... You know, Doctor Who was an all-ages thing.
Yep.
This felt the most babyish of all of them. They discover a place where there's talking space babies.
Okay.
Dealing with a boogeyman.
Sure. Okay.
It feels very kiddie. It was a little bit... I was a little worried after, like, I was like, I don't know about this.
Okay.
But it's got a solid finale. Then there's The Devil's Chord, which has Jinx Maestro... Or Jinx, what's her name? A drag queen.
Right.
She plays the maestro, a sort of someone who tries. But basically, Ruby and the Doctor go to London in 1963 so they can watch the Beatles record their first album at EMI Recording Studios. And they're recording these like schoolyard jingles. And it turns out that Maestro went back in time and basically killed music in the 30s.
That's fine.
And so, like, there's no music. And if you try to make any, like, so if they show a woman, like, playing an orchestral thing on her piano, Maestro, like, pops up and eats you, essentially.
That's fun.
The Doctor is kind of... She's kind of scary, but also, like, a crazy, crazy over-the-top. And there is... One of the things I really love about the season, the fashion is fantastic. Like, they look... They get dressed up in, like, 60s clothes and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like, it looks beautiful.
They're leaning into it.
And they managed to get around the Beatles being in it by not having any Beatles. They didn't have to pay for any Beatles songs.
Because there's no actual music. Yeah. That's fun.
But there's some great bits about whether John and Paul and Ringo and all them can save music as a whole.
Okay.
So that was really fun. And then there's the third episode is called Boom. It's written by Stephen Moffat.
Okay.
Stephen Moffat, who did, among being showrunner, also did Blink, one of the best standalones.
Yep.
And it turns out Moffat working with Russell T. Davies may be like the best Doctor Who. It is the one about a planet that's in like eternal war, and it starts with the Doctor stepping on a landmine, and he's basically like stuck there, and Ruby is trying to save him, and it's a really, really good story about like the nature of war and propaganda and that kind of stuff.
That sounds interesting.
And then the week after that was an episode without Ruby, the Doctor, where Ruby basically does the slow time travel thing. They show her getting older. And there's a mysterious, almost like an It Follows type thing going on, where she can't go back to the TARDIS. She can't make contact with other people, and she's very isolated. And that was a really good sort of high concept. And last one that I just watched was called Dot and Bubble, that is about young 20-somethings living in a world where they're all influencers.
Brief glimpses of this.
They're in like this holographic, like Facebook kind of thing.
Okay.
And it is about the Doctor and Ruby trying to save them from a thing that's threatening. They don't know it's threatening them. And it's got some interesting things to say about sort of the world of influencers, but also about like how the older people treat that kind of thing. These were all really, really good episodes. Even if I wasn't super enjoying Scooty Gatwa as the Doctor, which I am, the stories themselves have gotten a lot better too.
Okay.
So definitely worth a look.
It sounds like some good high concept.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Yeah.
It's doing what I think Tennant and Smith did at their best.
Okay.
Which is, it's fun standalone sci-fi episodes.
I'm gonna definitely try and catch up.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. All right. That'll take care of us for the week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.